This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over gas. Guess what it is? It's the same thing we were doing last week, but the second section, White Lotus, Episode 2. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
That's all, folks.
Not yet, though, but it will be. But that's not all yet.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies and series. Sometimes not so rom-commy like this one.
It's dark comedy. Dark, dark comedy. It has its moments.
White Lotus, episode 2. And I am here with my bestie, better than the resty, who I am so glad that we do not have the dynamic in our relationship like the diva besties Paula and Olivia in White Lotus, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Oh my God, that breaks my heart, because I was going to say, and I am with the Paula to my Olivia, Corinne Edding. Damn. Wow. That did not work out well.
No, sorry.
Wait, who could I say we're more like? Because we're not Paula and Olivia. We were having a conversation about this earlier, and I said we're the anti-Paula and Olivia. If anything, we're too nice.
I would say that we're like Quinn and Mark.
Quinn and Mark. That's probably the most fitting thing, yeah. Or Lonnie and her absentee beau on the phone. Like, I'm here to support you. You don't want to come home? That's fine. But, you know, I'm really going to encourage you to, but I can't make you do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And don't even dare compare us to Shane and Rachel. Okay. No.
Oh, my God. That still hurts. I'm, like, going through it, and I'm still like, oh, God, that relationship just pains me. It pains me.
Yes.
I have a funny story.
Okay. I'm here for it.
So just as a nice little side hustle that I started since I stopped working, I'm doing dog sitting.
Nice.
And we've had a couple of substitute pod dogs here.
Aww.
And frequently, that's my favorite thing to do. I love having dogs long-term as boarders. It's really fun having a dog in my life again and then being able to give it away back to its owners. But one of the things that I haven't done is I haven't done drop-in visits on the dog sitting app that I am on. So yesterday I got a ping and somebody said, hey, my family and I are going to Disneyland. Would you be able to come and let out our three puppers and, you know, just for like 30 minutes, let them go potty, bring them back in the house.
Right.
And I was like, great. I will do that. I haven't done that before, and I kind of wanted to experience, like, the whole plethora of dog sitting, of which that was one.
Sure.
So
it's an exciting new adventure. I'm here for you exploring new territory. Being an excellent dog auntie to many a dog, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be an exciting adventure, but it wound up being one. Yeah, totally. So I went to this really nice lady's house. She gave me all the information on how to go in. She's like, there's this pool area with the gate, and there's two grassy areas next to our pool. So if you just want to let the dogs go into the pool area, let them do their business, and then, you know, bring them back inside and leave. And I'm like, great, no problem. So I go into her house, and two of the dogs were her sisters. One of them was hers. And they all greeted me at the door, very curious, very like, hey, who are you? And I was like, great, let's just go outside. Come on, everybody, let's go to the pool to go potty. So I was trying to lead the brigade out the back door. But there was one dog that was just like giving me the side eye, like, I don't know if I like you. And I'm not going to go to you. I'm just going to stay here and watch you trying to wrangle me into the backyard. So it took quite a few minutes. I got the other two dogs into the pool area. Finally managed to sort of kind of wrangle her out. But she was like, you're standing in the pool doorway and I'm not going to go that way. I'm going to go this way.
Yes.
And so she kind of like walked to the other side of the house away from me. And I went to go follow her and then realized that the side of the house wasn't enclosed.
Uh-oh.
I thought they had the whole backyard enclosed and then a secondary pool area that was enclosed, which is where I was supposed to take the dog. Did not realize there was no fence there. When I went after the other dog, the two other dogs that were in the pool area followed me because I didn't close the door.
Oh, no.
So then cut to me trying to wrangle three dogs, one of which wanted to have nothing to do with me around this really nice neighborhood's front yard. The dogs were pissing and shitting on their front grass. And I was like, that's fine. Just stay there. Please, everybody, please go in the backyard. I didn't have any leashes. I didn't, like I said, didn't realize that I was going to be wrangling pups. Finally managed to herd them to the back door and really, really hoped upon hope that this lady didn't have cameras. But I think she did because she tipped me a nice tip and then put a review, which I have not seen yet, but I'm assuming since she tipped me that she saw everything that I
did. You got to do it. And you got to read the review right now.
I don't have it. It said on the app, it's like, would you like to leave a review for the person that hired you?
Right.
If you do, you can see the review that she left for you. If you don't, you have to wait so many days until the payment processes before you're able to view it.
Oh.
So it takes 48 hours to process payment, and so I can't see it until everything processes. Mm. And so I don't want to be like, lady did not have an enclosed backyard, just FYI, if she said something really nice.
You need to be able to respond to the review if it's like, she was negligent. Yes.
Negligent. It was a big backyard.
Yeah.
And I just assumed was a fence.
I don't think that you were being negligent, okay? I know that, like, I was walking a dog one time and there was, like, something wrong with the leash or whatever. So, like, I unsnapped the leash to, like, reconnoiter things. And then the dog slipped my grasp, and then I had a fun time going through the neighborhood trying to get the dog back onto the leash. Now I had the pleasure of just one dog, but you got the three musketeers of puppers. So
yes,
it went on an adventure.
And then I wrangled the skittish two inside the house and left the older dog that seemed really chill and calm in the pool area while I took the two, literally picked them up, put them in the house and closed the door. But I didn't latch the pool gate. So when I went back in there to get him, I was like, where the beep did he go? He disappeared. And I'm like, sweet sassy molassie, do not tell me he pushed the gate open and left in the 5 seconds that I was there, because I literally thought that's what happened. So I ran back out to the front of the house and was like, where are you? Chuck, come back, Chuck. Where are you, Chuck? And then ran back into the pool area and was like, I don't see where he could be. There's not a lot of hiding areas except for under the bush right beside the house, which is where he was.
Aww.
And at that point, I was so stressed and freaked out that it was scaring the dogs. So before, when he was super like, hey, how's it going? And like, chill with me.
Yeah.
Now when I went to go grab him, he was like, get away from me, get away from me, get away from me.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
ran away. And so then I was like, this is my nightmare. And I'm never doing this again. Unless it's an established dog that I have a relationship with, because I freaked all the dogs out and myself and had about 3 mini heart attacks in the process. And I don't blame that lady if she never calls me ever again. And I'm surprised that I got the tip.
You are my dog hero. Okay. I'm just going to put that out there because I was freaking the fuck out over one dog. Three dogs. Ooh.
Yeah. That's why I can just imagine what that video looks like on her Ring doorbell. She was probably like back from Disneyland with her family cackling over a glass of wine because all's well that ended well, because I would do the same thing. I'd be like, this poor bitch deserves some money. But not everybody would see it like that. And so I am very fortunate that it seems like she does. But I'll definitely, when I see it, read it in the next episode to see what she says.
I love this venture that you're going on. Do you have a pupper with you now or no?
No. My next dog is going to be the Tuesday after we get back from Fresno. So
nice. Oh, you mean my birthday party?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Your birthday party / baby shower that you're going to hijack. Yep.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'm asking politely, have you hired the stripper for my birthday party yet?
Yes. He is going to don a adult-sized diaper.
Nice.
And a bib, and going to have a pacifier and possibly one of those like big baby hats if I can finagle it.
I think the bib should say, happy birthday, baby across there. Yes,
I agree. I think that's very fitting. And quite possibly, I might also have footy pajamas so he has more things to take off so that the strip tease is not going to be like 32 seconds.
Right.
I just don't know how feasible that's going to be since it's going to be 112 degrees in Fresno while we're there. Lucky us.
Yeah, that's the one thing that is giving me pause about my birthday party baby shower. Gentle listeners, I am not pregnant. This is for Tamara's niece / my fake niece.
It just so happens to fall on Corinne's birthday. If you haven't heard our previous episodes, yes, where we have gone on and on about how Corinne's going to secretly hijack that party and make it her own.
Yes. And, you know, I think having a stripper, given the weather, wearing a nice string bikini, you know, I've just been thinking, and it's all coming together because here we are. This is about a birth of a baby, the baby shower.
Mm-hmm. And it is, yeah.
I was formerly a baby, and this is my birthday.
I see where you're going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Red string all together. Done. Bam. Boom. I am ready.
So they're celebrating birth, and because they weren't specific about whose birth it was, that's on them. That's their fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will have fun explaining that to my niece, although I think she'll probably laugh and think it's hilarious because that's how she is.
I'm just wondering how I'm going to use those gift certificates for the baby stores. I mean, I think I might be able to quilt together a little something. I'm not sure, but you know.
You know, baby wipes can always be used for other things.
Yep. True, true.
Click cleanup, yeah.
Baby oil?
Baby, oh, there you go. Now we're talking. There's many uses. There's so many directions you could go. It's never ending. I'm sure you could find lots of things that you could use from a baby store.
Okay, I have a guilty confession.
Oh, no.
This may not be something that you know about me, Tam. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy good infomercial.
Do you?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And I have at various points in time bought things as seen on TV. And as a child, there would be things that I would see on TV that I would want to buy, but I could not buy because I had no money.
Right, right. I
and
got that.
Would have been mocked mercilessly by my parents as well. But one of the things I wanted to buy as a kid was Suzanne Summers' Thighmaster.
Oh, I had one.
You had a Thighmaster?
Yes. I can't remember if it was my sister who she borrowed it from somebody, or if it was my cousins when I moved to Fresno, but I remember using a Thighmaster and it did not work at all.
It wasn't because I thought it was going to do phenomenal things for my body, but
right.
It just like, it was something I kind of wanted to play with and, you know, like do something with. So yeah. So like I wanted a Thighmaster, and more recently I confess that I was seduced.
Oh?
Mm-hmm.
By?
I bought an infinity hoop.
What is an infinity hoop? I don't know. I'm not familiar with this.
You wear it around your waist and it has a weighted string and it's like a hula hoop.
Oh! Oh my gosh, you did not.
Okay. Like, here's how I justified it. Because I was just like, I want to play with that. I'm so curious. And I read the reviews and people are like, I can't get it to work. I can't get it to work. And I'm like, I know. It's not going to do anything. And I'm not going to be able to get it to work. But I have to know. I have to play with it. Much like the Thighmaster that I never got to play with. I was like, you know what? There are people who are getting rid of this thing left and right because they got seduced. Just like
right,
me.
Right, right. Yes.
And they decide, what the fuck was I doing? I don't want this thing. And so I went onto Facebook Marketplace, picked it up from a gal for like $30. And
how much was it regularly?
With their 50% off sale, it's like 90 or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Fuck right off with that.
Yeah. No, I wasn't going to give them any money. I was just like, I'm going to let somebody recoup their losses a little bit.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I've been playing with the infinity hoop. and not very successfully, but I'm determined to be able to get it to work for me. And then probably after that, I'm not going to be interested in using it, but I need to make the infinity hoop go. So,
right now that totally checks out.
Yeah. Right now it's the spin two times around and then slowly stop hoop. Yeah. Not so infinite.
Yeah. When I was playing with the Thigh Master at first, it was like probably a couple of days of, oh, do my thighs look different? No. Okay. Huh. Do my thighs look different? No. And then after that, it was like, what can I squish this against? Like,
yeah,
what
can exactly.
I master this up against that would be funny or fun? And it was just like a big toy after that.
Yes.
Let's run at each other and hit the Thigh Master and see who bounces further. I've never heard the Infinity Hoop. Now, as soon as we finish, I'm going to go find a fucking video on Google to see exactly what it does.
And then the people will be like, hey! And then like the weighted thing is like going around. So fun. And I'm like, yeah.
How long did you try doing it for? Like, what's a good Corinne try that you gave?
I'm not like, oh, I'm spending 10 to 20 minutes every day trying the Infinity Hoop. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try this for a little bit. No, didn't work. One more time. No, didn't work. One more time. Okay, I'm going to sit down. And then the next day, I'll try it again. So,
see, when I come down at the end of October, uh-huh, I think I need to be your tag team partner with this Infinity Hoop and kind of like bat at it like a tetherball.
Yes!
As you're trying to swing it around to like give it a little more momentum and keep it going. And then if it slows down, I'll get a run the other side and bat it again.
I have gotten better at it, you know. So at first it was like I swing it and it went circle once and that was it. And now I can do like, mm-hmm, 3 to 5 times, but like there's still no actual intentional movement that is making it happen. It's just kind of like accidental movement that's making it happen. Oh, you know,
well, I'm not ashamed to say I secretly hope you fail so I could be your tetherball batting Infinity Hoop champion over there, making it happen and making it work.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait for you to try the Infinity Hoop. You're just gonna be like
that's bullshit. That's what it's gonna be like. This is bullshit. I don't do it anymore.
That's one of the things I love about being an adult, though. You can be like, this is really stupid. And as a child, I would never have been able to buy this. And as an adult, I know it's really stupid, but the child in me wants it. And I'm going to make this happen. So, Tam,
mm-hmm,
I'm curious. Can you refresh the gentle listeners on what the fuck happened in episode 1 of...
I would be glad to, Corinne. And just like the Infinity Hoop way of bringing that back around.
Ooh, nice. Yep.
Synopsis. Here is what went down in episode 1, a.k.a. The Arrivals, which begins with a dead body being loaded onto a plane. The body came from the White Lotus. Corinne, the White Lotus. That is the name of the resort. White Lotus.
I pause every fucking time I try to say, you notice I didn't even say, I just said episode 1 because, mm-hmm, my mind went blank.
Yep. Pink peony. Yellow iris. No, it's the White Lotus. And we get no explanation as to who the body is. Instead, we see the week prior and all the arriving resort guests to the White Lotus Resort. There's the Mossbacher family. Mom Nicole, who's an important CFO and obviously wears the pants in the family. Her husband Mark, who's obsessed with the size of his ball sack because he's sure he has cancer. Their bitchy daughter Olivia, who'd rather not be there, at least not with her family. And her friend Paula, who's along for the free vacation and to keep Olivia company. And Quinn, their poor introvert son, who gets constantly bullied by his older sister and overlooked by his mother.
Oh.
Then the second guest we meet is Tanya McQuad, played by Jennifer Coolidge, who's there on this fun-filled resort trip to spread her mother's ashes in the ocean. We can tell early on that she has money, but she's also a lot. Mm-hmm. And finally, we have the newlywed Sutton couple, Shane, who's an entitled spoiled mama's boy who's obsessed with the fact that he didn't get into the pineapple suite, a.k.a. the resort's best room.
Mm-hmm. Plunge pool. private plunge pool. Private plunge pool. Yes.
Corinne and I differ on how good the best room is in the resort. Corinne is on team plunge pool.
Yes.
And Shane's wife, Rachel, who's starting to realize that she might have married somebody who only wants a trophy wife and simultaneously realizes that she married an asshat. Shane, her hubby, who's hell-bent on making Armand, the hotel manager, pay for not giving them the pineapple suite, which they are entitled to. And lastly, we have the Steph, the aforementioned Armand, who may be one of the worst resort managers ever. He's clearly over his position at the hotel because he uses every opportunity to bemoan or stereotype all the guests as needy little children who a bitch if they don't get their way. Mm-hmm. Most of his complaining is due to Lonnie, the new hire. It's her first day and she's very much in the middle of labor, like water breaking in the lobby labor. And lastly, there's Belinda, who's the spa manager that Tanya has taken a shine to because of her magic hands and chants.
Ooh.
Well, you might be thinking that's mostly who the people are and not much about what happened, but in a nutshell, the Arrivals episode introduces us to the quote-unquote players and the seedy undercurrent of something being a little bit off about the White Lotus Resort. And not much else. But that's going to change today because things are going to happen, or at least start happening. And Corinne, will you jump us into what they are?
Oh, I will. You think I won't? I will. Because it's a new day, a.k.a. episode 2 is called A New Day.
Mm.
And we open on the Diva Twins, who I redubbed the Diva Besties. Even though Diva Twins sounds better, I thought it might be confusing because they're not sisters. I don't know. What do you think? Diva Twins, Diva Besties?
I think if we establish with the gentle listeners, are you okay with Diva Twins? Yes? Okay. I think Diva Twins is fine.
All right. We open on the Diva Twins, Olivia and Paula, who are very much not sisters, but friends, smoking weed together. Fortunately, Olivia didn't forget her trusty mini bong for the Hawaii trip. Don't leave home without it. They share with each other the variety of pills that they brought, including Adderall and, surprise, surprise, ketamine. Because what party is complete?
They brought a whole bunch of stuff.
They're like,
oh, but I have this. Oh, but I have Ambien. Oh, but I have Adderall. Oh, but I have this from anxiety. And I'm like, this is a fucking pharmacy in that little bag. Like, there is a lot of shit in there. And then they're like, we don't have any real drugs. Oh, wait, I brought weed. Oh, I don't have a bong. Oh, wait, I got a bong. Oh, and I fucking totally forgot I brought ketamine. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. There's like $300 worth of drugs in these ladies' bags. Anyway, sorry, continue.
Oh, let me look up my vajay, see what I stored there.
Damn it, Corinne. You almost made me do a spit take. Oh, that's where I hit the bong. There it is.
Yeah.
It's a little wet. Just let me go wash it off real quick.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, totally.
They are excited about their future K-hole Hawaii trip. However, are interrupted when they hear a loud, "Wahoo!" coming from the adjoining room. Quinn comes out of his galley kitchen room, and the two friends are startled from their perch on their hide-a-bed. Olivia and Quinn's mom, Nicole, pops out of the room and explains, "Kids, your dad found out he doesn't have cancer." And Quinn just silently observes the whole situation while Olivia says, "Great, can you keep it down?" just golden child right there.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Nicole sniffs the air and asks, "Are you burning something?" And I have a hard time believing she does not recognize the smell of weed.
Yep.
It's a lot.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. If it was like a weed vape pen, I could see that. Like,
you're
it'd
right.
be like kind of something indistinguishable and sweet in the air, but they were full on smoking from a bong. So you know what that shit smells like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the age of like 5, I knew my parents did not do drugs or even drink, but I knew what weed smell was.
I don't think I knew until middle school before I'd be like, "Oh, somebody hit a skunk."
Sometimes people do hit skunks. I unfortunately did a while ago, but yeah, no. Apparently, I was a much drug savvier child than Tamara was.
So surprising, because my dad did smoke weed, but he was such a good gaslighter that I was just like, oh, I think I told this story before. My godparents had a little garden in their backyard in Morgan Hill, and we were forbidden to go back there. And they said it was so we wouldn't trample the vegetables. When in actuality, my dad told me many years later, they were growing weed back there. Little pot farm in the backyard.
Well, you know, the difference between my parents and your dad was you said your dad was a gaslighter, and my parents, I would say like, oh, what's that smell? And my parents would explain it to me. So,
see, that makes way more sense. That's why. And I was like, what's that smell, Dad? It's a skunk. Oh, that's what a skunk smells like.
My parents were like a walking, the more you know, bling, kind of parents. They would either explain it or they'd say, look it up. And I would look it up. So, yeah.
Oh, God. That is hilarious. Because you'd think it'd be exactly the opposite. You'd be the sheltered one because your parents are so straight-laced. Yeah. And my dad was like partaking in some things, just not telling me about it. Oh, ignorance is bliss.
Olivia dismissively says to Nicole, mom asking what that smell is, we're being witchy, mom. Paula seconds this. Man, she is the most impolite. like, as a child, being a guest for somebody, like, friend, I'm not going to be saying half the shit that she does.
Yeah.
But Paula is no holds barred. Gosh darn it.
Well, she's taking the lead from Olivia, who's just naturally a bitch.
Mm-hmm. Paula seconds this. We're channeling Hecate. Olivia continues. Okay, you can go back to your room already. Oh, man, if I told my parents that. Somebody would be getting to stay in the resort room by themselves without their friend. While other people went and did things.
Yeah. I don't even want to know what would happen. I would probably be, but I can't even. It would be, I don't know if I'd be alive. It would be like a maybe near-death experience.
But you wouldn't dare. You would not dare.
I wouldn't. No. Because I like life. I want to live. I don't want to die. Yeah. I didn't curse, and I've said this before on the podcast, until fifth grade, and that was when I was behind the school by myself, and I said, son of a bitch, and I said something so low, and I thoroughly expected my dad to barrel around the corner and beat the crap out of me. It didn't happen, but I didn't curse for another 2 or 3 months, just in case it was a fluke.
I'm so glad you tepidly, you know, put yourself out there.
I did. A son of a bitch.
And now you waited until your dad died to do this podcast so you would not offend his yes. Puritan ears.
If you can notice, every time we first said it, I'm like, and this is our cozy irreverent podcast with my bestie. Sorry, Dad.
As I said to my parents, who do not cuss at all and are not interested in hearing cussing, do not listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Yep.
But they did. And then they said, you cuss a lot. And I was like, yes, I told you not to listen to the podcast.
I just have to tell my dad, if he was still alive, God rest his soul. It's about period stuff, Dad. Menstruation, lady parts, female problems. Yeah, give it a listen. You totally should. You'd be like, and pass on that.
My parents would be way more likely to listen to that than.
Right. Yep.
As soon as Nicole closes the door, because apparently she took orders from her child.
Right?
We hear her announce to Mark, the kids are just thrilled that you don't have cancer. Quinn starts heading back to his closet when he pauses and asks, can I have a hit? Olivia rolls her eyes. Ill? No. Quinn threatens, if you don't let me, I'll tell Mom. Paula deadpans, snitches get stitches. And Quinn actually doesn't tell, which, fuck that shit. I would have been like, Mom!
Like, seriously.
Just because they were being assy, you know?
I think Quinn knows his place in the family, though, that Mom will come out and be like, Olivia, are you smoking weed? No, Quinn's lying. He's just making stuff up because he's sleeping in the closet. Okay, well, be nice to your brother. I'm going to go back to my room now. Bye.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. You're so spot on with that. I completely agree. That would 100% happen.
And Quinn knows this.
So he just goes back to his closet and isn't heard from until the next morning when his mom, Nicole, pulls the door open and sees her son naked, lying face down on the floor. She exclaims, "What are you doing on the floor?" He complains, "There's no air in here." And Nicole, who could fix the situation, doesn't. Instead, she starts moving furniture around. Mark excitedly tries to interact with Olivia, but if attitudes were names, hers would be eye roll. So yeah, she's not impressed. Mark also finds the cornucopia of pharmaceuticals that they have, but Paula explains it all away as she flatly says, "Their prescription." Nicole tries suggesting that everyone get ready to go down to breakfast, and Quinn, who has thrown on some boxer briefs, has had enough. "Mom, we're on vacation in Hawaii. This should not be a stressful situation." And he slams his kitchen bedroom door. Hopefully, things are going to get better in other parts of the hotel.
But they're not. Apparently, Armand is questioning whether he should remain sober. And Belinda, who arrived to work looking worn down, encourages Armand to continue. "You've been sober for 5 years. You can do this." Things are going badly as well in the dining area. Newlywed couple Shane and Rachel are getting into another argument. Shocker! Because Rachel got a potential writing assignment. And I'm guessing he's persuaded her to turn down writing assignments before because she tells him, "If I keep turning down assignments, they're not going to want to work with me anymore." He responds with a twinkle in his eye. "You know, now that you're married to me, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do." And she has a look on her face that says, "What if writing is what I want to do?" However, what she says aloud is, "I'm just not used to that. I've always had to hustle, and it's going to take some getting used to." And I suddenly had a vision of her as a very rich, sedated older woman who didn't do anything with her days and was deeply unhappy.
Oh,
same. Okay. Aside from Shane being an ass, me and Larry had a conversation about this because, as I said, we were watching this together. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "That's kind of fucked up." But he didn't have any context, mind you.
Right.
But he was like, "That's fucked up that she wants to work on their honeymoon. Like, right. It's their honeymoon. They should be spending it together."
Yeah.
And then as he watched it, he was like, "Okay, I get it now." But initially, just with that, I'm kind of like, it is kind of everybody sucks here situation because yeah. I think she's just pushing the point to prove that she's still independent and an individual. But I wouldn't want my significant other to work on their honeymoon either. What do you think, Corinne?
Oh, no, 100%. Like, okay. Shane is one of those people who I agree with and I don't agree with all at the same time. Because it's all packaged in the attitude, right?
Yes, I agree.
And so, like, what he's talking about is he just wants her to be financially dependent on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like for him, yeah, part of it's about not wanting her to work on the honeymoon, but also a larger overarching thing is he's like, "Babe, no, don't worry about it. I got you. You don't have to do a single bingle dingle thing." Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And it's not in a "I'm going to support you, follow your dreams" kind of way. It's in a "I will provide for you. You just have everything go around me, please." You know?
Yeah. You just sit there and look pretty.
Yeah, exactly. So if I were in Rachel's situation and I felt that way about my job and we're just like hanging by the pool anyways, what I would do if the deadline was reasonable, I would just set aside an hour to a day to do the research and to work on it and just do it while I was hanging out and, you know, like chatting, mm-hmm. parallel play kind of way, and still do activities with my horrible new husband.
Yeah, because they're not together like 24/7. They do separate activities. So yeah, I get that.
And also, I wouldn't be happy if I was on my honeymoon or any kind of vacation and my partner was like, "You know what I want to do? I want to accept a new job and just do a lot of work while we're on vacation together." I'd be like,
"No,
fuck right off with that."
See, I totally agree with you because I'm like, "Rachel, don't do that on your honey while you're doing it to Shane." Well, fuck yeah. I'm on board. You do you, boo.
Yes.
You go ahead. Do that. You need to take that article. You really do.
Mm-hmm. Because she got to look out for herself. With a guy like Shane, you got to put some muscle in that hustle.
Yep.
Either that or have him buy you a lot of expensive gifts that you can then sell later.
Oh, boy. Or just not get married. Annulment.
I know. I don't think they've had sex yet. So it all makes sense. Yeah. Oh, no, they did, I think, at the end.
Yeah, they did.
Dang. This section is titled Big News. Shane is an asshole.
Oh, what?
Surprise, surprise. Extra, extra. Now, I understand that Shane wouldn't want Rachel working on their honeymoon because, duh. But he's giving off larger overarching control vibes, as we just previously spoke. Speaking of Shane and ruining honeymoons, as soon as Shane sees Armand, he fucking ditches Rachel to talk about the pineapple room.
That's like his Moby Dick.
Mm-hmm. It is, and I just finished the first edit of episode one. Mm-hmm. And in it, I said, hey, Tam, because Shane says, Rachel, I'm not going to bring up the pineapple room any longer. And then I said, hey, Tam, how much do you want to bet that he will bring up the pineapple room?
Well, I think he's bringing it up right now, Corinne, isn't he? Is he not? Is he not bringing up the pineapple? Okay, okay.
In the previous episode, he also brought it up, like, I don't know, 2 to 3 other times after he said that.
But it's the pineapple room with the plunge bowl that he's not getting. You don't understand.
I do understand. I have a passion for the plunge bowl pineapple room, other than it being in fucking the White Lotus
Yes, good, resort. Corinne. Good.
Yes. Yes. I almost called it the White Orchid, okay? True confessions. So, yeah. So, he continues to pursue this. And also, once again, I'm in the halfway completely understand Shane's point. Halfway, what the fuck, dude? Let it go. So,
yeah.
He ditches Rachel to talk about the pineapple room and how he'd like to make sure that his mom isn't paying for the more expensive room. Also, he says, since you messed up on our room reservation, I'd like you to do something to make it up to us. And the way he says it is just so shitty and entitled. And Armand deep breathes through this conversation and gives the lackluster customer service that I continue to see from him. But he does say, with a placating smile on his face, you go ahead and enjoy your day, and I'll be thinking about what I can do for you. We'll talk later. And with that, they part ways.
We got to go back because I've been in customer service for many, many, many years. Mm-hmm. And if you try to like soothe things over with the customer and it doesn't work and they continue escalating it.
Yeah.
Like you should give them something, especially if you fucked up, which he did fuck up.
He totally fucked up.
And then continues to gaslight this guy and be like, ugh. He wants the pineapple room that I double booked. Like, fuck this guy. You just got to have a cheery persona. Like, he knows he fucked up, and yet he refuses to budge.
Yeah.
Which is understandable with the circumstances, because Shane's being an irrational asshat. But it did not have to get to that point.
No.
Like, Shane is a dick, but his latching onto this and not letting go is probably because nobody in his life up until this point has been like, yeah, you got fucked over. Sorry about it. I'm not going to do anything for you.
Well, and he also, and once again, siding with Shane, when I hate siding with him because he's such a fucking asshat.
You are closing your eyes almost like in pain as you say that you're siding with Shane.
He's being gaslit and he knows he's being fucked around. So, yeah, he's like, he's pushing the point because of that.
But then he also should say, like, I need you to fix this.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do? I don't need you to think. I don't need you to come back to me later. It's hard enough finding you as it is. What are you going to do to make this right?
I don't know. He has no hard time finding Armand. He keeps on talking to Armand. Poor, it's like he's got like he slipped an Apple tag into Armand's pocket. So he just followed him wherever he went. But like,
okay.
To your point, when they first had this conversation, if I were in Armand's shoes, what I would have done is I would have said, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. I made a mistake. I double booked the pineapple room, and unfortunately, there are other guests who are already in there, so I can't give it to you. Let me give you...
comp your meals.
Give you a reduced hotel rate.
I will comp your like, something.
Yeah, I know that this isn't going to make it work for you.
Right.
But like, I will do that, and then... as soon as I can get you into the pineapple room, I will move your stuff and unpack it beautifully into the pineapple room, and you'll have a day of free room service while you luxuriate in your plunge pool.
And that was directly out of page 32 of the ODK Customer Service Handbook.
Are you looking to up your customer service game? We at ODK here have experience in the customer service realm, and we have wisdom to share with you, our gentle listeners.
And had it gone our way, this movie probably would have ended right here.
But instead, a shit show just kind of unravels before us.
Corinne lovingly named this next section, T is for Tanya and Tamara, and that's good enough for me. And then we see the one currently happy person in the series, Tanya, who's been transformed by the magical hands and chanting of Belinda. She's just gotten a massage from Belinda, and she is thrilled. Was that really 90 minutes? Because it felt like 10. Belinda smiles tightly. I think you fell asleep. And Tanya agrees. I know. I fell asleep and I dreamt I was on top of this beautiful mountain range in Asia. Belinda responds. Oh, that's really cool. And Tanya forges on. And I had a cyanide pill and I... Listen. A lot of people will just oil you up, but you really know what you're doing. We should have dinner at the hotel tonight. You changed my life yesterday, and I really have to know how you do it. Belinda tries graciously turning her down. We're not really allowed to associate with guests like that. And Tanya is outraged. What is this, some kind of caste system? We can have dinner. Who do I talk to? Oof. Belinda decides it's better to placate Tanya. You know what? I'm sure it'll be fine. I'll talk with Armand. I get off at 7. And Tanya happily agrees. Great. We can meet a couple minutes after 7 at the restaurant.
Yeah, Belinda smiles. That'll give her a lot of time to just be ready.
You'll be there at 7:03.
Yeah.
7:05 at the latest. Belinda smiles with a smile that doesn't meet her eyes and agrees. Sounds great.
She knows how to give customer service, even though she's also a line liar pants, and I still have not gotten to the bottom of it.
It's just, it was probably just a writing mistake. It was probably, don't make this your Moby Dick. Don't make this your pineapple room.
I'll make it my pineapple room if I want to.
Okay.
I know.
Okay, I'm not going to judge.
I have insight.
Just don't go on about it on the podcast. Do it before or after we record.
Oh! I am feeling like there is a caste system in this podcast, okay?
God, stop.
I'm feeling like I'm censored.
Oh, censored my ass. Outdoors poolside, Shane approaches his wife, who is sitting in a lounge chair reading a book. He's just finished chatting up in German with the German couple who have their quote-unquote hotel room, and says to his wife, who he promised to stop bringing up the pineapple room to, you know, that guy at the front desk is a fucking liar. He said the couple was staying until Wednesday, but they just told me they're leaving to Germany on Tuesday. Rachel doesn't care about a private plunge pool as much as me, Corinne, and Shane does, and absentmindedly says, okay, well, maybe we can move into the room on Tuesday. He probably misspoke. Shane smiles an angry smile and says, front desk guy doesn't want us to have that room. Rachel sits down her book and looks at Shane. Why wouldn't he want us to have the room? Shane self-righteously states, because he thinks I'm an asshole. And Rachel asks, well, were you an asshole?
And she gives him a look. She gives him a look. I was like, damn, Rachel.
You want to answer that question? I'll wait. And of course, her husband scoffs. No, I was literally trying not to be an asshole. And Corinne asks Tamara, how successful do you think Shane has been so far in not being an asshole? Corinne, I know I don't like him because he's an asshole, is what I wrote. But honestly, I really think he was holding back. Like, honestly, like, knowing him and his persona, I think he could have gotten vicious and vindictive and straight nasty. And I think he was probably censoring himself because it was his honeymoon with Rachel. And he's like, oh, I want to at least wait a few more months before she sees the real Shane shine through.
But he was still being an asshole. regardless.
He was still being an asshole, yes. But he was like being a reserved asshole. So he was probably like, you have not seen me on a 10. That was Shane on 4. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That was totally Shane on 4. You can tell that there is so much like simmering underneath his surface. It's a little scary.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Rachel, thinking Shane hasn't been successful, says with a smile and a twinkle in her eye, but you failed. Ouch. Woo, burn. Burn. He failed at being not an asshole.
Not an asshole, right, yeah.
Shane doesn't find this to be humorous and picks up his phone and does what any mature 30-something-year-old would do in the situation. I'm going to call my mom and see if they refunded the difference between the rooms. Beep, boop, boop, beep. He calls his mom and half whines, Mom, the room situation hasn't been resolved yet. Can you see if they refunded the difference on the rooms? He listens and responds, oh, yeah, get Lorenzo the travel agent on it. Rachel isn't paying attention to anything he's saying, though, because she is distracted by Nicole. She's wearing a red hat that makes her look like a target. Makes her head look like a target.
Yes.
Karen. Banner writing.
It's like a white. It's stripes. It's like circular stripes of white and red, white and red. It's a target.
I guess I didn't realize that. My sister has the same exact hat that's blue and white, or at least she did.
Okay, but blue and white is less of, hi, I'm a Target hat. Like, red and white are classic Target colors.
Now I just want to go to Target.
Ooh, let's go. Okay, gentle listeners, I'm sorry we're going to have to resume this later because Tamara and I are going to go to Target.
Which would happen frequently had we been in the same city together. Mm-hmm. Anywho, she looks like a Target, and I'm figuring that's because she's Rachel's entire reason for being there in the first place. Too bad she wasn't paying attention, though, because if she was, she would have heard Shane's mom declare that they're going to regret this because they're getting Lorenzo on it. Lorenzo the travel agent, and Lorenzo is a gay Filipino beast.
And while Daddy Mark is trying to bond with his son and get him to become a certified scuba diver with him, while Quinn and Mark sit at a swim-up pool bar and Quinn just wants to eat his Aloha nachos in peace while he plays video games. Amen, Quinn. I feel you deeply on that. Rachel takes the opportunity to approach Nicole, who is working away on her laptop. Sorry to bother you, Nicole glances up and says kindly as she closes her laptop. I'm just answering work emails when I'm not supposed to be working. Hi, I'm Nicole. Rachel introduces herself and follows it up with, I know who you are. Nicole Mossbacher, do you mind if I sit? Nicole responds, oh, please have a seat. I've been wondering, are you on your honeymoon? I just saw you and your partner on the boat, and you two seem to have that newlywed glow about you. Rachel smiles self-consciously and responds, yeah, I was actually hoping to get a little advice from you, as you're married and have a successful businesswoman. Rachel launches into her problem. I married a fucking asshole dickhead. Oh, wait, no, she doesn't say that.
I don't remember that part of the movie. Wow.
She says, you see, I've worked really hard to get where I am, but my career is nothing in comparison to my very successful husband, who also comes from money. And he wants me to give it all up. But I'm concerned that if I do, I'll be a planet caught in his gravity, centering everything around him. Nicole treads cautiously. May I ask, do you have a prenup? Rachel explains, yeah, it's generous, but it's tiered with years and other requirements. Rachel trails off and Nicole fills in the blanks. But it wouldn't be enough for you to support yourself. Rachel sighs with relief. Yeah. Nicole very sensibly answers, well, then you need to be very careful and keep your own orbit going, because if a few years down the line, or like 5 seconds down the line, just saying, you've abandoned your career. And I'm not saying this will happen, but if your relationship falls apart, you'll have nothing. This is super sound advice. And Rachel says, well, thank you for your time. She looks at Nicole, hoping that she'll ask her to stay. But Nicole doesn't say anything, so Rachel gets up. However, as she's halfway up, Nicole says, so what do you do for a living? And Rachel sits down with a swiftness, eagerly answering, I'm a journalist. I'm freelance, so I'm all over the place. Nicole enthuses, amazing. What do you write? And Rachel offers, well, I actually wrote a profile about you. Well, about you and other women. 10 power women in the tech world. It was in Business World. Nicole flares her eyes. Wow, that was a real fucked up piece that you wrote. I read it. It was a real hatchet job. Rachel's eyes widen. No, it said how you were kicking the corporate world's ass. Nicole pushes back. No, you made it sound like I got my promotion because of optics. She rode the Me Too wave? Shit like that? You made it sound like I was some kind of Machiavellian Gorgon using the machinations of the company to further my own craven ambitions. Rachel looks genuinely surprised. Well, that wasn't my intention. Plus, I got all of my information from a New York Post article. That was your problem right there, fucking Rachel. Are you fucking kidding me? You call yourself a journalist and you don't know about the New York Post? Come on. I mean, sorry. But from the New York Post article on you. Nicole doubles down. That makes it worse. New York Post, hello. No, you didn't even research. That's bad journalism, not to mention inaccurate. Like, she only used one source. She's like, oh, let me just, I mean, this is why she can easily get that other article done quite quickly, because she's like, oh, let me look at the Wikipedia page and then just rehash it on this, like, yes, the other article guy.
Exactly.
Bad journalism, not to mention inaccurate. I climbed a hellish ladder on my own, working my ass off. I didn't ride some wave. Rachel stammers. I'm sorry you didn't like my piece. I don't know what else to say. Way to take ownership, Rachel. Like, not at all. I'm sorry you didn't like the fact that I said that you got your job because of other people, a lawsuit, and the Me Too wave. That's not my fault, though. That was what it said in the New York Post article. So, really, I mean, you should just
I plagiarized, so.
Yeah, you should just be talking to them.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're mad at me.
If they wrote something nicer, I would have wrote something nicer. See how that works?
I'm not responsible for your feelings, Nicole, okay?
Or my actions. Oh, wait.
And Nicole's expression says, fuck right off, Rachel. It's time for you to leave. And she just sits there silently and stares.
Yeah. I'm and like, leave. I wanted you to leave. I was so uncomfortable. I was like, get up. Get up now. Get up and go. What are you doing? You're still sitting there. Why are you still sitting there?
After Rachel self-righteously stares at the glaring Nicole for a few beats, she gets up and leaves, saying, have a nice vacation. Nicole responds, saying, fuck right off. But she says it by responding, have a nice vacation, Rachel. I was like, ooh, that was the most fuck right off, have a nice vacation that I've ever heard.
The next section's called Caught in the K-ho-ho-ho-ho-ho-ho-ho.
I saved that section just for you, Tam.
Oh, God, I feel this so hard. This section, flashback, back, back, back. The diva twins, Olivia and Paula, are on the beach and they decide to snort some Special K. Olivia swears it'll only last 20 minutes and at first they're super blissed out. And then Paula's eyes widen and she balks. Oh no. Olivia turns around to see what Olivia is staring at. And we'll find out what that is after this break. Oh no. And we're back. When we left off, Paula was suddenly horrified by something she saw. Was it a bad trip? Well, kinda. It's Tanya bustling towards them, waving enthusiastically, determined to create a connection with the twosome. Oh, hey, girls. It's so nice that we finally get a chance to chat. Olivia and Paula try really hard to act sober, but there's nothing worse than having to try and act like your shit is together when you're flying high as a kite and you just want to space the fuck out.
Amen to that.
Yes. I have been so baked and somebody comes in and I'm like, I am too high for this. I am too high for this.
There were a couple of times because I thought, I don't drink. Maybe weed will be my relaxation drug of choice. And I tried several times and it was bad, bad. Every time, except for the first time, it was bad, bad, bad. And either I didn't get high at all or it was like way too hardcore. And then I ended up feeling like I was trapped in my body with my brain spinning around, but unable to connect thoughts together because, hello, weed.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of times where I had to try and, like, act like I had my shit together. And I was like, I don't have my shit together at all. I'm just going to try and pretend to be as normal as possible. But this really sucks.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And couple that with the fact that Tanya is a lot. A lot. Not somebody you want to corner you in a conversation, which is what's happening.
Yes. I'd be like, I gotta take a nap. And then I would try and move and it would be hard.
Tanya gushes compliments all over the two. Your girls are so lucky. Your skin is so dewy like an athlete after you've just run, but natural. Olivia and Paula blink. And Tanya continues, you know, I'm looking for a place to spread my mom's ashes. She died recently, and I was initially thinking about the shoreline. But what if some of the ashes blow back on the land, on the beach? And that's really like littering, and it just doesn't feel right. So I'm thinking it'll be better if I rent a boat so I can spread her ashes in the deepest parts of the ocean. What do you think? Olivia and Paula blink, blink, blink at her some more. And then finally Olivia says, we have to go. We have to pee really bad. And Paula apologizes. Sorry about your mom. And the diva twins start beating a hasty high retreat while Tanya yells after them, I have to pee too, but I'm holding it. Have a nice day, girls.
You should hold Once it the... too so I can talk to you.
Just come back. Come back. Once the divas beat a hasty retreat together, Tanya finds the backpack that Olivia left behind. And I wonder what exactly she's going to do with that bag. Is she going to go down a K-hole that might relax her more than Belinda's hands or can completely send her over the edge? It's a half toss, really.
This next section is entitled Drugs and Bestie Betrayal, and I feel like the bestie betrayal in this is going to have layers upon layers upon layers, but right now, we're just sort of into the first-ish to second-ish layer of bestie betrayal.
So, I don't know what that noise was I just made. I said, oh, yeah.
It was an affirmative oit. Maybe you meant to say, I-t. You know.
Yep.
Yeah, as you are wont to do. So instead of going down her own private K-hole, Tanya does the right thing, which I don't think she'd ever come back from, honestly. But she does.
I totally picture it as like Bridget Jones in The Edge of Reason when she eats that magic mushroom pizza and is like in the water going, everything's glittery. The whole world is glittery for like 45 minutes.
And I think you're totally right.
Mm-hmm. She would just be out there like enthusiastically talking about and to the ocean.
Oh, everything's so sparkly. Have you seen the sparkles out here? Girls? Oh, that's right. They went pee. And I think I peed a little bit in the ocean and it sparkles.
Now I'm feeling like I am being peer pressured into doing Special K, and yeah, I'm not complaining about it if it's a sparkly world. I mean, I'm ready for my glitter rainbow unicorn lifestyle.
No. I don't know why, but the only other things I've tried besides alcohol and weed, I have not had good reactions to. So I'm not looking forward to trying anything else for the rest of my days. Thank you.
Tanya, though, perhaps is on Tamara's trip as well. She's not going to do the extracurricular drugs. And does the right thing. It gives the bag to a staff member who, in turn, gives it to Armand, who is in his office having a fuck of a day because he is getting reamed by Lorenzo, and not in the pleasurable I'm just bending you over the table and fucking you kind of way. Instead it's verbally instead of oral, and the travel agent who Lorenzo insists that Rachel and Shane get that pineapple plunge room on Tuesday. Armand explains that they can't have it on Tuesday because of cleaning protocols, and I'm wondering once again what is wrong with this resort, because what resort could possibly stay in business with a 24-hour cleaning protocol? Fishy business, I say. Fishy business! However, after he gets off the phone with Lorenzo, he goes through Olivia's purse to try and figure out who it belongs to, and finds the entire pharmacy of prescription mind-altering drugs in there. Oh, I think it's Paula's backpack, but it's all confusing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he goes through Paula's backpack to try and figure out who it belongs to, and finds an entire pharmacy of prescription mind-altering drugs in there, including the mini bong. He promptly steals the drugs from the purse, obviously because he cares about minors and suspects it belongs to Olivia and Paula and is looking out for her well-being, right?
Wrong. Wrong.
Meanwhile, diva besties Olivia and Paula have been freaking the fuck out because they came down off of their high and realized that their drug bag was gone. They run around looking for it, but to no avail. So they show up late to the Mossbacher family dinner, claiming that Paula's backpack is missing and it has some crucial. I said all those big words that fucking Nicole said, and now I can't say the word crucial. Jeez. It has some crucial shit in there. Not drugs.
What? It even sounded weird. That crucial sounded a little bit off still.
You know, here's the thing. I said fucking Machiavellian Gorgon, no problem.
I know. Oh, it's just not fair. The world's just not fair.
It's just not fair. So there is some crucial shit in there, yo. Not drugs. No, not drugs. No drugs in there at all. But Paula's thesis thoughts. Yeah, that's it. The diva besties.
Thesis? From a 16-year-old sophomore who's doing a thesis?
She's advanced. Don't you realize that? Jeez.
Okay.
After they explain the situation, the diva twins sit at the table long enough for Mom Nicole to point out writer Rachel and explain, she's a stranger and she admires me, but my own daughter won't even do that. Olivia rolls her eyes. Your job is responsible for the downfall of society. Daddy Mark jumps in. Hey, your mom is one of the few women in leadership at a big fucking Machiavellian Gorgon. Can't say big tech company.
The C's are giving you problems today, Corinne.
Just call me Orin, okay?
Okay.
At a big tech company that created the very web browsers and search engines that you use. So she is fully worthy of our respect. Olivia has had enough. And when she sees Armand walk by, she follows him into the hotel and asks him about the backpack. Armand looking to save a child's life from drugs. Selflessly goes into the office, does one round of the chicken dance, and comes back out claiming not to have seen it. Olivia's nonplussed at this, but she's even more miffed at her bestie Paula, who has also stepped away from the table because she sees Paula flirting with the hunka-hunka busboy Kai. Olivia returns to the table, Paula shortly after her, and Mark takes this moment to give a toast. You know, I went through a health scare recently, and it made me realize that every day is a new day. And if it is, you're always being born into life. Like, all the time. We're not stuck decaying or dying. Any hoosers, that's what I've been thinking about. And I just wanted to share it with y'all. I love you guys.
Aww.
We love you too, Mark.
We're so glad your balls aren't cancerous.
Amen to that.
While all of this is going on with the Mossbacher crew, Tanya's having dinner with Belinda, and Belinda admits, I often wonder if I have any effect on guests here. There are so many rich white people who I treat, and it's just a lot sometimes. Tanya encourages her, you help me so much. Tanya reaches out to the tables nearby. Hey, you should go see Belinda. She's changed my life. And turns back to Belinda and says, have you ever considered going into private practice? I know so many rich white people you could help, and I would love to be an investor. And to mix my metaphors or sayings, my spidey senses are tingling, and if I could be yelling at Belinda, danger, Will Robinson, danger! Back away, back away, back away, back away. But she will not. She is caught in the siren song of a rich investor, and that has stirred something inside of her. Ooh. Hopes, dreams, the potential to live and work on your own terms. Yeah. Our poor Belinda is hooked. And at our final featured table, we have Rachel and Shane. Armand brings them some free Veuve Clicquot champagne and lets them know that he's going to try and get them into the pineapple room before they leave. And it has suddenly occurred to me that Armand is using the pineapple room on Tuesday, and that's why it's occupied. Perhaps for a sex party, or perhaps for his own personal getaway, or a little column A and a little column B. That's Corinne's theory there.
It's a good theory. It's a good theory.
It's a good theory, and the theories are flying fast and furious over here. But that's not what Shane is thinking about. And as soon as Armand leaves, Shane shares, finally, he's giving me some respect. Lorenzo must have talked to him. Ooh. Rachel really doesn't care and changes the subject. I'm going to take that job. Shane is upset. It's our honeymoon. Why would you work on our honeymoon? And they get into it a bit, with Shane ultimately trying to buy off Rachel by saying, I'll pay you double to not write that article and enjoy our honeymoon together. We don't hear how she responds, but a while later, Rachel holds her hands up to the sides of her face and hisses at Shane, do you see that woman over there? She gestures towards Nicole and says, she's a bitch, and so is her daughter.
Oh my God. I mean, I agree about Olivia, but I feel like Nicole was actually very kind and gracious towards her.
Yes, but she didn't like her article, Corinne.
I wonder why. It's like you start seeing the onion layers of this all. Okay, maybe Rachel's a better match for Shane than we thought because she wrote this shitty article about Nicole. And when Nicole cites specific reasons why, she's like, but it's not my fault. I got my article from the New York Post. And I'm like, okay, that's like real shit. And then she calls fucking Nicole a bitch when I'm like, no, honey. She was having a conversation with you that you needed to put your listening ears on for.
And she actually was really cordial and polite before she found out who she was. Yeah.
And even then, she showed how to have a restrained conversation versus Shane, who just, you want to smack him upside the face. She was just like, look, here's what it is. And she explained it to her, but ain't nothing getting through Rachel's coconut head. So there you go. Betsy betrayal does continue. Then we get a bit of a visual reference to the hallways of The Shining, which also doesn't bode well. However, that we just set that aside. It doesn't really get addressed. And the foreboding is cut short by moving into the Mossbacher's hotel suite. And we see Nicole move the rollaway bed into the main living area, telling the Diva twins that you're just going to need to deal because Quinn will not be sleeping in the kitchen any longer, which is what she should have fucking done the first night.
And I kind of think like the whole room is a dick move kind of for the Mossbacher family because the parents get their own big, beautiful suite, and they are very fully aware of the relationship that Olivia and Quinn have, and they expect them to share a room together with Olivia's bitchy friend Paula as a tag-along. Like, couldn't they get dual suites or adjoining rooms so there was another private area, and then, like, the girls could have had their own bedroom, the adults could have their bedroom, and then Quinn could have had like the main living area to himself. Like that's fucked.
Well, and I mean, that's sort of what I thought, because as we will recall from the very first episode, when Armand tries to ineffectively assuage Shane, he offers up the largest room in the hotel, which has two bedrooms and a bevy of other things. And Nicole has mad money, so there's no reason why she shouldn't do that. Exactly. I completely agree with you. Yes.
She's a CFO.
Yeah.
And even after like the first night, she could probably go down and talk to Armand and be like, hey, kids are having a problem getting along. Is there anything we could do with a separate bedroom situation? But no, she's just like, I'm just going to let my daughter bully my son. This is fine.
Yeah. On the other hand, I mean, that's something that my parents would just do with me and my sister. We did not get along growing up. And, you know, they're like, sorry, you got to figure out how to share the space. But figure it out, bitches. If they had the money that the Mossbachers have, I think that they would have, you know, done different things too. Yeah.
And I understand you and your sister's situation. And I agree, like in some circumstances, you're like, you just got to figure it out. But he's a teenage boy and they're teenage girls.
Sure. After Nicole leaves, Olivia stares at Quinn. Quinn stares at Olivia. They stare at each other. And she says, we don't want you here. Quinn sighs, shakes his head, grabs his comforter, and exclaims, fine, then I'll sleep on the beach. And he leaves. However, that leaves the Diva twins with each other and without drugs. So, what to do? What to do? What do you do when you don't have drugs, Tam? What do you do?
Alcohol.
That falls in the same category.
Oh, fuck. Uh-huh. I'm at a loss.
Yeah, yeah. Particularly when you're the Diva twins. However, Olivia figures it out. It's confront your bestie time.
Hmm.
Olivia asks, who's the guy that you were with? Paula once again gaslights her. There's no guy. Olivia persists. There's a guy. I saw you with him in the hotel lobby and you two looked super, super cozy. Paula denies. No, it's just some random busboy who likes me. It's stupid and it doesn't mean anything. And now I know why I can never remember the name of the show, Orange Poppy, because it really should be called Resort of Lies.
Orange Poppy.
Because this show's like heroin. This show will make you feel like you're going down your own personal K-hole or your money back.
Mm-hmm. And Corinne writes, bring it home. And then she cut apart that's Rachel telling Shane she's not writing the article and being pissed at him, making her laugh and flattering his way back into her good graces. Unless Tam wants to write about it. She does not. But she will read that little snippet because it was good. In Mark and Nicole Mossbacher's room, Mark gets a call from his uncle, who seems like a very nice guy, and also tells him that his dad did not die of cancer. No, it was AIDS. And his dad lived two lives, one with Mark's mom and Mark, and the other as a gay man.
Mm.
Mark is shooketh. Mm. Nicole, who can hear the conversation, is shooketh. They are shooketh.
Mm-hmm.
But who is not shooketh? Is Armand, who is taking a drug of unknown to us properties from Olivia/Paula's bag, and with that he bids adieu to his sobriety. Hashtag sadness.
Aww.
But let's not leave on that note. Let's leave on a slightly sweeter note. Quinn makes his way down to the beach. Wrapped in his comforter, he sits on the sand looking at the ocean and the setting sun. The sunset is almost done, and peachy hues fill the bottom of the skyline against the darkening ocean. But much to his wonderment, Quinn sees a whale fluke in the ocean, the tail flipping up and disappearing back into the inky water, and then the whale leaps up into the air and splashes down, causing Quinn to smile in delighted wonderment over this magic moment he is having on the beach by himself at night. Aww. The end, part two.
Yay!
He finally got his magic moment away from his screens. Yay, Quinn! Yay! See what happens when you look up? And I'm sure there's some point in there where he was jacking off to porn, but I digress.
Not that episode. I'm not saying he won't jack off to porn on the beach, but hey, if you're on the beach by yourself, jacking off to porn, go for it.
There's one thing I did notice about, like, when he went to go sleep on the beach, there was light on the horizon. And I was like, is it sun? It's got to be, like, sunset because...
Yeah.
Or whatever. And then in the morning, when he woke up, the sun was kind of the same spot. And I'm like, is there an area in Hawaii that's kind of like Alaska where the sun never fully sinks behind the horizon line? Or at least you can kind of see like its glow. Because it was like, went to bed, the sun looked like it was in the same spot, not fully gone. And then he wakes up and the sun is still kind of sort of almost there.
Yeah, I debated whether that was a sunrise or a sunset, but him leaving at night and walking out onto the beach, it would seem that it was sunset.
Right.
But then it was already dark before that. It was just a whole confused. Yeah. Mm. So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Script supervisor, we have questions. We have questions.
Now, this isn't like a Hallmark script supervisor situation. This is much milder, but still, we have questions.
Yes. So, Tamara, do you want to do bad decision dinosaur ratings of people?
What is the dinosaur ratings?
Oh, there's this, there's a little comic and there's bad decision dinosaurs and dinosaur and he makes bad decisions. It does not need to be bad decision dinosaur specifically, but I just use that phrase. And we could basically say, like, we can talk about people's bad decision dinosaur moments or like how their ratings was. So like, oh, Shane and Armand, bad decision dinosaur. I give it 3 bad decision dinosaurs.
3 out of how many?
5.
Sure. Bad decision dinosaur ratings. I already said when we talked about it at length, I will stick on this hill and I will die on it, that Nicole Mosbacher should have got a second room so that her kids didn't have to stay in the suite together and poor Quinn continued to get tortured by his older sister. 5 bad decision dinosaurs to Nicole. You are a bazillionaire. You can afford the room. Give one of your kids some refuge from the other.
Is it somewhat mitigated by her confronting Rachel about her article? Because she has only one bad decision dinosaur for me on that, because she was like, you know what? I'm going to say what I think. And I'm going to say it concisely and directly. And fuck you.
That was a great decision for her to make.
I know.
That's a good decision gnome.
And just gentle listeners, just so you know, the good decision gnome has sparklers in each hand and is like waving them triumphantly.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so she gets 5 bad decision dinosaurs and 1 good decision gnome. What about what about Shane?
Oh, God. His whole life is just a bad decision. It's full of bad decisions. Starting with birth, when his mother spoiled him. Actually, okay, to be more specific. Fucking leave the pineapple room alone, dude. Leave it alone. Let it go. You don't have the plunge pool, that's fine. Your girl doesn't seem that into it.
It's not fine, but that's...
I'm sure Corinne will disagree with me immensely.
Here's the thing. If I accidentally married Shane and
accidentally. Just like he slipped and fell on his dick. Just yes. Like that. Just, yeah.
And he managed to get us back into the pineapple plunge pool room. Mm-hmm. And I realized at this point that I had made a ginormous mistake by marrying him. What I would do is I would just sneak into Armand's office and I would steal the sleeping medication and I would just kind of lightly drug him so that he would just sleep through most of the vacation and I could hang out at the plunge pool by myself.
There's a few problems with that, Corinne. First of all, she doesn't know that there's sleeping pills in there, so that probably won't work. Yeah.
I feel like you're bursting my balloon, and next thing you know, you're going to say, Corinne, I really don't think that you should take over my niece's baby shower to have it as your own personal birthday. I don't know.
I will. 5 bad decision dinosaurs, Corinne. 5. So what do you think? Does Shane have a bad decision dinosaur or a good decision gnome?
Shane has absolutely no good decision gnomes. Mm-hmm. And he gets bad decision dinosaurs for his interactions with Armand. He gets bad decision dinosaurs for marrying Rachel. They are not suited for each other. Like,
I bet you he love bombed her because at one point she said they had a really quick...
Yes.
Relationship, like they got together, they got engaged, and they got married like really, really, really soon.
Yeah.
So I'm all love bombing.
Yeah. I mean, Shane is just the manifestation of the not cute manifestation of Bad Decision Dinosaur. Yeah. So, yeah, he gets all the Bad Decision Dinosaurs. Shane.
You know who else I'm going to give a lot of Bad Decision Dinosaurs to? This might surprise you, and it might be a controversial take. Mm-mm. Belinda. Do not go to dinner with Tanya, Belinda. Uh-huh. Don't do it, girl. You don't see, you can't see the can of worms you're about to open.
Mm. Mm. I have sympathy for Belinda because it's hard when you're in a customer-facing role to say no to people sometimes.
It's true, and I would take you at that. But she also, I want to say, is like giving her more grace because of the monetary situation.
Honestly, with you the monetary situation with Tanya, it sounded like she just wanted to buy Belinda.
Yeah. And I'm like, you could rent me. You can't buy me.
Yeah.
If you're going to give me a $200 tip for massaging you for an hour, then that's like $200 I just made. So thank you. Come again.
But I'm not leaving. Yeah. Belinda's in the midst of some sticky wickets. I would say she gets three Bad Decision Dinosaurs at this point. Because she has tried to put her off in a variety of ways. So it's not like she has not tried.
Yeah, but she could have potentially, like, I imagine if she said, I can't do that, they'd frown down upon it. And Tanya's like, who do I have to talk to? Like, please, by all means, go talk to Armand. He'll tell you the same thing. And then I'm literally off the hook because I'm following protocol.
Yeah, I would just try and get to Armand before Tanya did so I could be like, hey, baby, have my back, bruh. Have my back.
I think he would. And I think that just knowing Tanya and how she is, and if you're approached by somebody like,
I really need to have dinner with Belinda because she changed my life.
No, she didn't. Have dinner by yourself, you poor lonely lady.
Okay, Tanya, Bad Decision by Dinosaur or Glorious Gnome or whatever. What did you call it?
Good. I love it how my stuff does not stick in your head no matter what. Series is Good Decision Gnomes.
Good Decision Gnome. No, that I mean, Good Decision Gnome is the best. So, Tanya, what do you think about her in this episode?
She hasn't done much besides hook Belinda into a dinner. I'm trying to think of what else she did in this episode. Oh. I'm going to give her...
Strike up the friendship with Olivia and
Paul. I'm
going
to give her a Good Decision Gnome for that, for fucking with those surly teens in the middle of their K-hole.
Hi, girls. I know you're tripping balls, so here I come.
Yes!
I'm going to have a deep and meaningful conversation on my part with you and sit here uncomfortably until I bring you off your high. Yes. Yes.
Blink. I kind of love that.
I'm giving her props.
Yes. I think this is the last time that Tanya's going to get a Good Decision Gnome, but I will.
Oh, I beg to differ.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm excited
only
now.
I've seen this before. Yeah. Only because I've seen this before. You have to give Armand,
Armand.
We're talking about bad decisions. He fell off the wagon, drugs.
Heartbreaking.
And you know havoc is going to be wreaked.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to wreak havoc because you can already like see it slightly.
Mm-hmm.
His persona is falling.
Yes.
All the bad decisions right then and there.
Mm-hmm. Armand, you need to call out sick. If you called out sick, Good Decision Gnome would be sitting squarely on your lap. But I don't think you're going to call out sick. I think this is just the beginning of a dark, dark spiral for you on top of your bad managerial decision making. So, yeah, he gets a flying flag 5 of bad decision dinosaurs.
Yep.
You picked Armand. I will pick, oh yeah, Rachel. Rachel.
Oh gosh. Oh Lord. She's in the middle for me because this one thing, and it's a gnome gnynosaur. It's a gnynosaur.
It's okay, it's bad decision dinosaurs, but they're wearing good decision gnome hats, and we're all very confused by it.
Yeah, because I think her decision to do that article in spite of her husband's protests is her taking back her identity, good, but doing it during your honeymoon, bad, even though your husband's a douchebag.
Marrying Shane, bad.
Burying Shane?
Marrying.
Oh, yes. Marrying. Oh, no, no, no. We're past that. That should have been the first episode when they landed on the beach and you're like, what? I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
You guys are married? Oh, shit. Okay.
Okay, but her approaching Nicole and asking her for advice, actually good decision gnome right there.
How do you figure?
Because Nicole actually gave her really thoughtful advice.
Mm-hmm. Then she gets bit in the ass when she's like, oh, you're a shitty writer and wrote some fucked up things about me.
Yes, well, she should not have revealed that about herself, which is why the bad decision dinosaur is wearing the good decision gnome hat.
Mm. Oh, so I say a funky middle of the road gnynosaur, gnomosaur. And so you have to find another way that she did a gnomosaur moment. So what I'm asking is, because I found a middle of the road gnomosaur and you found a middle of the road gnomosaur, are mm-hmm. we supposed to match each other, or is it just happenstance that Rachel is a gnomosaur savant? We're still not clear on the rules. We're figuring out as we go. Thank you for partaking in this journey with us.
You know, I appreciate that we've invented a new creature, a gnomosaur. So there's that as well.
Yep.
You're going to need to create an illustration of the gnomosaur for us, just saying.
You know, I don't have anything really going on right now.
I thought you were wondering what to do with your time, and now I have figured it out for you.
Yes, you have.
Okay, so I don't think that we really need to address Mark and Quinn in this conversation. Or did you want to address Mark and Quinn? No.
Nope. I don't think it's necessary. Paula neither. I mean, she's making decisions, but we don't know if they're dinosaurs or gnomes yet.
Oh, she's making bad decision dinosaurs decisions because she's fucking gaslighting her friend. Is that a good idea to gaslight a friend, Tam?
I'd say we don't know. Well,
I think that it is a good thing to gaslight your friend. Obviously. Why would it be a bad idea?
Because Olivia seems a little volatile.
You know, gaslighting isn't really that bad. You see, it's actually kind of a good thing.
Stop it. Stop it.
I was gaslighting you on gaslighting, huh? How'd you like it?
I just think that we need to leave some of these gnomes and dinosaurs for other episodes when we have the more serious Quinn, Paula, Mark situations, perhaps.
That sounds good. So then, Tam, what do we have coming up next week?
Another episode of White Lotus.
If you have anything you'd like to say about our bad decision dinosaurs, good decision gnomes, my inability to retain information, you can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on the DMs via Instagram or Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. Or if you would like to share your illustrations of what you think a gnomosaurus looks like,
yes,
please send it to us via email.
Yes.
Like Corinne said, all that other stuff. And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we greatly appreciate it. But we're glad you stopped by, and we bid you adieu with one
dry kiss.
Mwah, mwah. See you next time.
See you next time.
Voof click it. Voof click it. cut. Corinne even put this phonetically. Bless your heart. And I still got to fuck it up. Veuve Clicquot.